Yeah, that's NFL for you. You know, it's hard to win in this league. And, you know, to have a team like this, to have offense, defense, special teams, players, coaches, all these people here, you know, it's the NFL. And so it's hard to win this league. We're excited. But, you know, we got a lot more to, you know, get better at, a lot more to, you know, progress and, you know, get ready for this week.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's, of course, a voice that you are getting to know well that you will hear plenty more of in the years to come. It's Caleb Williams. After his first regular season win as Bears quarterback, Bears took down the Titans 24-17. I'm Anthony Herron. This is the Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm taking you up to Sunday Night Football coverage here on The Score tonight. The Rams take on the Lions on Sunday Night Football. Pregame coverage coming up at 6:30 and kickoff at 7:20 right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. You can tune in all day tomorrow for a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority. Chuck Swirsky will be live from 12 to 5 a.m. overnight. Looking forward to listening to Chuck overnight. Then Mullion Hall will have full reaction to the game starting at 5:30. That would be a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority. So, Caleb, you heard his voice there sounding composed, sounding responsible. I think we're getting accustomed to that, recognizing that that's who he is and that's how he comports himself with the media. His numbers overall, 14 out of 29 for 93 yards. Took a couple of sacks in the game, evaded some other sacks. Some of those would have been on the offensive line. Some of those certainly would have been on Caleb in holding the football, in looking to extend the play and try to make things happen. And the Bears offensive line was certainly one of the concerns that I talked about just sort of coming into the regular season. Now, the best five, and I guess, you know, kind of including the full group of guys I would presume the Bears saw as potential starters, or call them the best six that the Bears had the potential to put on the field here, I felt and still feel pretty good about the potential for that group. The depth has concerned me the entire time, but the combination of how Shane Waldron would operate, would call the Bears offense, how a rookie quarterback would be able to keep everything, you know, sort of in line for the Bears, to get the play call, to break the huddle, to keep things on time, to not get overwhelmed, you know, by what the opposing defense is throwing at him. All those things end up factoring in to how the performance of the offensive line ends up getting perceived. But just kind of left to right between Braxton Jones, Tevin Jenkins, you know, what right now is the starting center in Coleman Shelton, Nate Davis at right guard, Darnell Wright at right tackle, and wherever Ryan Bates ends up fitting into all that, I feel like that's a group with enough physical capabilities and certainly enough starts under their belts at this point where I look at that and say, you can take the field, you can win games, you can perform efficient and at times high-level offense with that group. And there's not going to be many teams in football that are going to put a handful of Pro Bowlers up front on their O-line. So much of it comes down to, at times, the quarterback getting guys out of jeopardy. A lot of it comes down to the play caller scheming things up in a way that gives them an opportunity for success. The way that they can stay on the field with each other, communicate with each other with continuity, and get just into a rhythm, into a flow. And that matters so much up front on the offensive line. So today's game with that Bears O-line, Braxton Jones got beat with power at times, you know, got sat back into the lap of the quarterback. Tevin Jenkins got beat with finesse and counter moves on the interior at times today. Coleman Shelton at times got run over today. He got beat both with power and also with what seemed to be at times miscommunication between Coleman Shelton and Nate Davis. Darnell Wright, you know, I thought for the most part seemed to hold up pretty well both in pass protection and against the run. But again, you know, it's kind of my first blush reaction just off watching and evaluating the game that took place in front of us out there at Soldier Field today. But the thing is, there's going to be clips. You can find clips of the best offensive linemen in the game, and they will eventually and occasionally, as they get impacted by a powerful defender, trip on a teammate's foot and get sat on their keister. Or there will sometimes be miscommunication between guys up front where they think, all right, we're running like that 19-yard loss. It looked like the Bears were in a form of jet protection where the entire offensive line is moving laterally in unison. And, you know, it's almost like a zone blocking scheme like you would in a run game where you kind of move laterally and everybody's moving in the same direction. And you're supposed to just kind of pick up any guy who's coming in your area without necessarily having a specified defender as your pass protection responsibility. It just, something about it looked out of whack. And I don't know exactly why or what happened, because the direction the O-line is moving in, it looked like they're expecting Caleb Williams. Usually when you're running that as a pass protection where you see the entire offensive line, you know, let's picture it in your mind's eye where you're behind the football, you're Caleb Williams, and you're looking out from behind the center. So the entire offensive line in unison all begin moving left. They're hoping to bring those defenders with them, both with the defense, who usually that front seven will move to some degree in unison with the O-line, because your initial indicator as a front seven defender is that the O-line is usually going to take you to the football. So your first reaction when the ball gets snapped, the O-line moves in one direction, you tend to move with the O-line because that's your gap responsibility. So when you run that sort of protection, like, you know, again, it looked like some form of jet or maybe scat protection. I think it was like a jet protection where they all move in one direction. So they're expecting that front seven of the defense to move with them. Tennessee actually had a little stunt on in that moment. So, you know, their big fella in the middle decided, you know what? I don't feel like moving with that O-line. I'm penetrating. So they gave up some very quick penetration into the backfield. Now, when the O-line is all moving to the offensive left, what you're normally expecting is that with that pass protection, the quarterback will either begin moving in the exact same direction in a rapid manner and sort of outflank the defense because that's where all the blockers are going, or what it looked to me like what was designed in that play was that the expectation was Caleb was going to roll out in the opposite direction, use some form of run action or misdirection. And it just looked to me like Caleb was supposed to operate in the opposite direction. I don't know why Caleb didn't. I could be completely wrong, but to me, the way the O-line moved, the way the routes were going, the way Caleb started to move himself, it looked to me like he was supposed to go in the opposite direction. But for some reason, he ended up just still being in the tackle box. You get some quick penetration in there. He's running this way, twisting that way. It ends up being a 19-yard sack that just looks all kinds of discombobulated. So that's just one moment that the initial penetration that happened took place between Coleman Shelton and Nate Davis. Now, between the two of them, there's an interior defensive lineman. I think it might have been Tavondre Sweat. It's either Sweat or Simmons. I'm honestly not even completely sure off the top of my head which one it was. But they got quick penetration from the interior of Tennessee's defensive line. Didn't get passed off between either guy. Shelton's stepping left. Davis is stepping left. Neither guy really got a good piece of the Titans' defensive lineman. And then Shelton kind of spins around, reverse pivots, and he's trying to do what he can to get a piece of him. That guy didn't end up sacking Caleb Williams. And then as Caleb continues to run around, then eventually he gets sacked for a 19-yard loss. What you're hoping for is that your quarterback will have a level of presence in the pocket to either climb the pocket vertically, do something to evade multiple defenders, but preferably to get out of the tackle box enough to throw the football away without a penalty flag. Or if he doesn't get out of the tackle box, to be able to throw it in the area of a teammate where it's just an incompletion as opposed to a 19-yard loss and a sack. 19-yard loss and a sack is going to kill the drive. There were a number of drive-killing moments that ended up happening. They weren't all as bad as that. Not a whole lot of 19-yard losses that you're going to take in the course of a game. But there were other times where you saw penalty flags on procedural issues from the Bears offense. At times, drop passes, that took place. And certainly at times you did see, like I was kind of referencing a few moments ago here, you did see where there were times where guys just got beat clean and quick. So this is one of those games where Caleb didn't play well in his first NFL start, but I'm not surprised that a rookie quarterback, even though he's the number one overall pick in the NFL draft, I'm not surprised that he at times looked out of sorts in the game today. And even when he mentally didn't look out of sorts, he wasn't completely in rhythm. There were handoff issues at the mesh point at times with Caleb. And even when a lot of what was going on, where the route comes open clean and the protection is sound and he knows mentally where to go with the football, but for some reason he sails it or throws it too far out in front or too far behind, so a defender knocks it away and it's an incompletion. There were certainly a number of those types of things that you can point directly to Caleb and say, yeah, he could have been better. But I feel more angst about the way the offensive line performed, because that's a group that's had more experience. They've spent more time working together. The collective starts for that group up front, even though it's not an old group. But at this point, Braxton Jones has played a lot of football. And he's played the majority of that football next to Tevin Jenkins, who's played a lot of football. Nate Davis has played a lot of football, the majority of it for the team that he faced today in the Tennessee Titans. And Darnell Wright started every game at right tackle for the Bears last season. So this is an experienced group in their season opener. And that, to me, I find more concerning. The Bears' offensive line and them not seeming to gel in the way that they didn't, that, to me, is a bigger flashpoint from the game today, from my evaluation of the game, than Caleb looking out of sorts. 312-644-6767. And yes, you may have noticed Ryan Bates ended up rotating into the game as well. You know, he had some nice moments out there. He got flat-backed, you know, at times too. And when he didn't get flat-backed, you might have noticed he's got the big, you know, RoboCop brace on his left arm, like maybe he hyperextended his elbow or something to that extent. And there were multiple times where he's given up penetration right through that left arm. Defenders know that. Defenders see that. Defenders are going to test that. That's part of why most football players, they don't want to get all braced up when they're going to take the field, especially if it's something that is truly still a weak point for them. And it looked to me on multiple snaps. Now, maybe he felt strong at first and then tweaked it or something like that. There were multiple times you could tell Ryan Bates didn't want to use that left arm, or just didn't feel the same sort of power and force with his left arm, and gave up penetration in there. So there's a wide variety of issues there with the Bears, with the O-line, and just with the execution of the offense as a whole. And yes, even the veteran wideouts were imperfect, where Keenan Allen drops a touchdown pass down there as well, coming down the stretch of the first half. So there's a lot to improve upon from the way the performance from the Bears went today. And safe to assume that they will improve. We know Matt Eberflus is one of these guys who takes this very workmanlike approach and gets everybody all revved up and riled up. And after one game, to be able to teach from a position of strength, to be able to teach from a position of positivity, while at the same time being able to put that film on and say, guys, this isn't us. Defense, this isn't how we defend the run. O-line, we need you to be better in protection. Quarterback, when you see it, we need you to rip the ball in there. And there was a stretch in the game where Caleb was starting to do that. And that does bring me to something. I told you I'm not going to go all in on Shane Waldron here. I'm not going to put up a bunch of red flags on the Bears offensive play caller. But there is a concern that I do have. I'm going to take a time out, come back. We'll get some more callers in here, because I see a lot of you on the line. I see Danny, I see Ann, I see Aaron, I see Ryan. Phone lines are lit up at 312-644-6767. I'll get to some more calls. I'll also let you hear from Matt Eberflus and more from Caleb Williams as well. But I do want to tell you, just in my initial impression of Shane Waldron, I'm going to try to give Shane Waldron some grace in the face of something that I did find concerning from the game today. I know this is becoming my thing here on the station, where I tell you what's wrong with the OC. I don't want to tell you there's something wrong with the OC, but I do want to tell you the OC did something wrong today. I'll get into that next. I'm Anthony Herron. This is the Post Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Levis, down he goes. Jervon Dexter closes the drive.
Well, Tremaine Edmonds right here. He's just man-to-man on the halfback, and he's showing pressure. This illusion of pressure, and then they let their front four take over and beat the front five for the Tennessee Titans. Momentum back for Chicago.
Like the sound of that. Thanks to Fox for that sound. Adam Amin, Mark Sanchez on the call. That was the hit of the game. It's sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools. Made in the USA for 100 years, Estwing.com. And that sack, and hearing the name Jervon Dexter, what comes to mind, I had a couple of notes about his pad level during the game today, because for a young player of his stature, you know, everybody's kind of built differently. Everyone has sort of different ways that they were taught to play the defensive line position at the amateur level before they come to the pros. Jervon Dexter was a match step guy in his defensive scheme in college. He was not somebody who would come out of his stance with a flat back and look to penetrate and close on blockers in a rapid manner at the snap of the football. So that's what this Bears defensive scheme calls for. He's got the physical traits to do it. He's got not only the requisite size that you hope for, frankly, out of anything, for like a modern three technique, he's probably a little bigger than you would want a modern sort of twitched up three technique with sort of sudden movements to be. But he can, at his size, move with suddenness, violence, rapidness. And I really liked his pad level throughout a lot of the game today. And he would get in the blockers with force and pad level, and he did a pretty effective job working off of those blockers. And sometimes what you end up doing after you get into the blocker with force and you let them feel that power, and as they sit down, sometimes as a defensive lineman, it can force you to pop tall in your stance and you raise your pad level, thus negating your leverage. You lose the power and the force that you initially created. And one of the things that can be really difficult to do until you strengthen your core, and when you get enough trunk strength and just the requisite technique and time on task to work through it, is you can bring that force with low, flat pad level into that blocker. And then when you feel them sit down, get off of that blocker with force while maintaining your pad level, while maintaining your leverage. And I saw some good looks at Jervon Dexter doing that in the game today. So that was exciting. I think there's going to be some good film in that regard from Jervon Dexter doing some nice things both against the run and as a pass rusher, and getting penetration, moving the line of scrimmage, not just moving the opposing body or, you know, overpowering an offensive blocker, but using nice leverage and hand placement, and not only getting into and onto those blocks, getting off those blocks and freeing himself up to make some plays. I liked what I saw from Jervon Dexter. I'm not all in on him being the Pro Bowl shop wrecking three technique of the future, but today was evidence of growth. It was nice to see that evidence of growth in game from Dexter today. He made some nice things happen today. Let's get another caller in here, 312-644-6767. Ryan is up on the UP. I was just talking about the Bears offense a little while ago. Ryan has some thoughts on Shane Waldron. What's happening, Ryan?
Hey, how's it going, man? So thank you. I love the show, first of all. But yeah, with Waldron, what I'm concerned with is, when he was given one of the first interviews, the statement he was saying about Caleb was this steady incremental progress, right? And red flag alert, Matt Nagy. Like, that's the same stuff Matt Nagy said. I'm like, please no. And then today I see Waldron come out here and try to do some like CFL Pee Wee League gimmick stuff with putting your wide receiver six out there in absolutely essential down and distance situations where it's like, bro, why did you invest so much to lock up DJ Moore to get Keenan Allen and Roma Dunze if you're going to come out here and throw it to freaking a bum sixth wide receiver who would be a practice squad player who's only on the team because of his special teams benefit? Like, what the hell are you doing? I'm sorry, man, but that just blew my mind. Caleb had a pretty decent performance based upon everything going on. Like, he got screwed. Keenan should have caught that touchdown. Caleb didn't lose his confidence. He stayed with it, man. And you can't expect a rookie in his first start to carry the entire team. So, like, in my opinion, Waldron, just please do not be Nagy 2.0.
Strong call, Ryan. I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you. I respect the passion and the definitive nature that you're describing things with. That does lead into what I was describing a moment ago here. So Shane Waldron, I told you I'm certainly not after one game, one regular season game. I'm not here to tell you that you know, all is lost. I'm not even here to tell you Shane Waldron had a terrible game today. But some of the things that the caller Ryan from the UP is pointing out here, I get where he's coming from. Now, the style of offense from the Bears today, to have some gimmick within the offense, that's a good thing. You don't want to just like line up with a fullback and go ISO over and over again. You want things that will keep the opposing defense off balance. You want things where they can't get a complete bead on what you're going to do with certain personnel that you're deploying. You want to make them think. So all that, I think, can be useful. Velus Jones, some critical downs and distances. I talked about this, you know, as the regular season was kind of coming to a close and we're talking about camp rosters and everything else. I don't see where Velus Jones has a useful role. I don't see where Velus enhances this roster in a way where it makes sense for him to continue getting the opportunities that he's getting. It doesn't seem that the performance, the in-game performance of Velus Jones hasn't seemingly earned the opportunities that continue to come here. Now, this is one of 17 games. Velus might not dress the next game, so who knows? But I told you in the course of the preseason, it didn't seem to me that Velus's performance. Now, Velus's potential, I get it, man. His potential is tantalizing when he's got the football in his hands because you see a frame that has a powerful frame, seemingly a durable frame. He's got burst. He's got a certain degree of elusiveness. He seems to have even decent vision when he's got the football. There's a lot that's exciting when Velus actually has the ball. The issue is the actual production or lack thereof. And beyond a lack of production, it would be better if Velus were receiving the ball and then immediately just falling on the ground. But a lot of times it's not that. It's Velus. We saw him as a rookie, Velus muffing punts. We've seen all the way up until now where Velus has struggled to even catch kickoffs at this point, which I was a defensive lineman. So I'm not going to sit here and act like I got a bunch of my own personal experience fielding punts in live action or fielding kickoffs in live action. I have coached both. I've been around each at a very, very high level, and I've been describing both for years on television and radio. Catching kickoffs is a lot easier than catching punts. And Velus is now to the point where he is consistently struggling to even field kickoffs. That's a huge problem. So if it's just a case of the yips, and Velus's yips are now becoming so detrimental to the Bears that you can't even put him out there on kickoffs, then there's got to be a deep conversation to be had. And I don't make it a point to go out of my way and tell you that certain individuals shouldn't be on the roster and who shouldn't be on the field, but just in evaluating the performance, there are other guys the Bears have access to on this roster. One of them is being tasked with doing the exact same thing that Velus was drafted for. DeAndre Carter, when given the limited opportunities he gets with the football in his hands, several times today when he got the rock, Soldier Field came to life. He put juice into the offense because he caught the ball cleanly as a punt returner and a kick returner and made a play. Velus Jones, for years now, has had an opportunity to make plays as a return specialist, as a receiver, and now as a running back, and too often, it's gone the opposite direction. He hasn't, not only has he not made plays for the Bears, he's done things detrimental to the Bears when given these opportunities. So, you know, you're in the first game of the season in his third year in the NFL. I'm not here to tell you all is lost with Velus Jones as an NFL player, But this is a team in 2024 that's got a lot on the line. And it's obvious that they love Velus. It's obvious that his personality, his energy, the infectious nature that he shows up at the facility with every day, and yes, his physical abilities are tantalizing and titillating. I get all those things, but there's not production that matches up with that. So they were willing to sit Velus down multiple times. He got sat down for a number of games as a rookie. He got sat down for a number of games as a second-year player. Why would you continue to dress Velus Jones when you have access to Tyler Scott? I'm not going to sit here and tell you Tyler Scott is amazing yet either. But it doesn't seem to me that Velus's performance is earning the opportunities he's getting in game. Velus's potential and Velus's personality seem to be earning more of these opportunities than the actual production that's there. And there's humans involved in this thing. They're all there working with Velus day in and day out. They're hoping that Velus is going to do some big things here, and everybody's happy when he gets a touchdown run in the preseason game. I'm happy for Velus when he gets a touchdown run in the preseason game. I'm rooting for Velus Jones. The issue is his performance is not there. The Bears know that. Ryan Poles, Matt Eberflus certainly know that. Where is that dividing line, though, when in a game like today, where you have this rookie quarterback and this upstart offense and all these things are struggling, and then in a game that you're trailing, Velus Jones muffs a kickoff directly to the opponent, and yeah, it's almost this sort of baffling bad luck that normally, if you muff a punt, it tends to go straight down to the ground. Now, the trajectory of a kickoff is more likely to carom in a more rapid manner and bounce further away from the return specialist, because the trajectory and the pace of the kickoff do lead them to bounce away from the returner, you know, and cover more ground than you do with a punt that's coming more with a spiral and coming straight down to the ground. The kickoff going end over end at a lower trajectory, yeah, you let a kickoff bounce off your chest, then that's more likely to bounce further away from you. Unfortunately for Velus, that one that bounced off of him went directly to the Titans and gift wrapped points for them. And there've just been so many examples of this in a young career that I'm confident these are conversations that are already going on with the Bears. How do they end up counterbalancing that? Everything that they like about Velus, they have to recognize that big boy decisions have to be made. Again, they have sat Velus Jones down before. I can't imagine that there's going to be much time here where those opportunities continue to come. Khalil Herbert is capable of returning kicks. DeAndre Carter is obviously capable of returning kicks. Tyler Scott is at least capable of catching kicks. And he's got better hands, and he's a better route runner than Velus Jones is anyway. There's just other guys who it just seems that they're just more productive football players than Velus Jones is right now. So we'll see how much longer the Bears sort of allow that to go. And you know, I don't know if he'd be on the team if Dante Pettis would have gotten hurt. You know, who knows? I mean, the injury there and Colin Johnson and some factors like that may have contributed to Velus ended up, you know, making the roster. But in the end, he's had too many costly issues in game for it to continue, in my opinion. But I'm not the one who gets tasked with making these choices for the Bears here. 312-644-6767. Let me get another caller in here. Danny is out in Harvey wanting to talk about the Bears' offensive line. Danny, you're on the Post Show with Anthony Herron. What's happening, man?
Hey, man, what's going on?
What's up, Danny?
You got it, man. This is the reason why I was really upset with the Bears with Justin Fields. Dude, do y'all not realize you don't have a line? Even the guys that you just traded for, the guys that you brought in, they're not what you need. And I know it's the first game, but I was anticipating. Well, no, I wasn't anticipating. I knew that this Caleb was going to be running around just like Justin Fields, because you don't have a line. And people want to keep shying away from that. You need to get some guys that are proven to be real linemen. And yeah, you can look around the league and say, yeah, it's the defense on other teams, and they're really tough to beat. But no, man, this guy is running from the beginning to the damn to the end of the game. I don't get it. I just don't get it. But you trade away Justin Fields, who's a game breaker, and what did he do to Pittsburgh today? I mean, it's just like you got to have some time for this boy. He might be a great one, but if he don't get no time, you're never going to see it. You're never going to see it. So my issue with that is the Bears, you want to spend money. You got to spend money up front. And the bottom line is, as long as I've been around football and played and coached football, the game starts up front, man. And that's the bottom line.
I appreciate you, Danny. It's a good call. Yes, the line of scrimmage. And Danny was focused more on the offensive line there and the way the quarterbacks are running around. And I think a lot of that is valid, while at the same time, if on that on that out and up, on the chair route, the Keenan Allen won that route on, Shane Waldron dials that up. If Caleb, as he got the football out of his hands on time, in rhythm, was trying to fit it between a couple of different defenders, sailed the ball over the head of Keenan Allen. You know, if that ball's in there, if on some third downs where he's trying to get it to DeAndre Swift out of the backfield, he's sailing it way out in front of his face. You know, and I'm not here to tell you that, again, context, a rookie making his first start. I don't expect Caleb to be perfect. History tells us rookie quarterbacks making their first start are likely to struggle. But I'm not going to say it's all on the offensive line either, because they do have a rookie quarterback, because they did have a defense across from them that was pressing the Bears wide receivers, that was making it difficult for some of them to get off the line of scrimmage. And at times, Caleb was hesitating, kind of patting the ball a little bit, looking around. There was a stretch of the game, though, that I want to get into when I come back, that does point to something I did find a bit concerning about Shane Waldron. I'll get into that next. We got some more callers who are on the call, who are on the phone line as well, 312-644-6767. I'll work to get a few more callers in, but I want to tell you exactly what did concern me about Shane Waldron. I also want to tell you something that concerned me with the Bears' outstanding secondary. You know, this is a highly publicized, well-built defensive backfield for the Bears. One of those guys has gotten paid, deservedly so. Got several other youngsters out there doing big things as well. There's one of them that worries me a little bit, though. I'm going to tell you exactly what I mean by that next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
DeAndre Carter will bring it out. It's a solid return. He's got an alley. There goes Carter into Tennessee territory. Might be one of the best returns you see in week one with the new dynamic kickoff. That one for 66 from Carter.
Well, watch Travis Homer get over here and make a block, almost like a puller. He's going to kick out. There he goes, number 20. Bam. Opens up the lane. And there goes Carter. The off returner making a block.
DeAndre Carter, 66-yarder into Titans territory. Had led to the first points of the 2024 season for the Chicago Bears. It's the Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm Anthony Herron, taking you up to Sunday night football coverage right here on The Score and on Odyssey. Who's Hot and Cold was brought to you by Plumbers 911. Plumbing emergency? Call the plumbing professionals available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. DeAndre Carter is certainly who's hot off the efforts he showed in the game today. And there was a variety of reasons that DeAndre Carter seemed to be so hot. The struggles of the Bears offense on the whole in that game, that ends up highlighting even more the advantage that they were giving and squandering by frequent field position. I mean, the punt returns early in the game as the defense is forcing punts, and DeAndre Carter has nice punt returns that were setting up quality field position for the Bears offense that they didn't do a whole lot with early. And then, of course, that kick return after Velus Jones has a kick return bounce off his chest or his gut or his elbows or all of the above. Caroms way out of nowhere. Titans recover that, leads to points for Tennessee. So the Bears are trailing 17-0. It looks like they're about to get run out of Soldier Field. And then there's a 66-yard kickoff return by DeAndre Carter. He has done that at a high level in his pro career before. So we know he can get that done. And after the Velus muff, there's Carter doing what he has done before. So it was certainly the right call, the right decision to make in that moment. And he took advantage of that opportunity, as pros tend to do. Now, let me say this. My who's cold might surprise a few folks. I didn't think Jaquan Brisker played real well today. And you know, he is one of the young, talented, sort of pseudo-stud defensive backs that the Bears have access to. And I am quite fond of Jaquan Brisker. I think he's got big-time potential. But just in my evaluation of him up to this point in his career, I would love the awareness, the on-field, in-moment, in-snap awareness of Jaquan Brisker to enhance. And I don't feel like I always see that. It was multiple times in the game today, and you know, he tends to miss a lot of practice time. We get real mad at Nate Davis about that. We're not as mad at Jaquan Brisker for missing a bunch of practice time. And, hey, if a guy's banged up, a guy's banged up. I'm just saying, that's for those who take big issue with Nate Davis, might be worthy of being consistent in that regard. But we see that Jaquan Brisker is a big physical specimen, a physical presence as a safety, and he's normally a sure tackler. But he looked rusty to me today, and even beyond a bit of rust that I think showed up in today's game with Jaquan Brisker, just on the whole, I think we see a variety of examples of the post-snap awareness, the in-game awareness between misdirection and blocking schemes and how he fits up when running the alley on the run, how he recognizes route combinations and coverage. I think there's potential for more, at times for much more, from Jaquan Brisker than what's there in production, in-game. And I didn't think he played real well today. So my who's cold is actually the Bears safety, Jaquan Brisker. Now, if he's able to stay on the field, both in practice and in games, then that should enhance the development of Jaquan Brisker. But he's a guy that, to me, in a Bears defense that started to get some things figured out in the second half and faced an opposing quarterback who, yeah, well, Will Levis is running around, starting to feel himself, point for first downs, and you know, leaping into the air of the oncoming and awaiting 250-pound Tremaine Edmonds. Why he thought that was a positive decision to make, I have no idea. But Will Levis doing what Will Levis kind of did back in college and has done so far early in his young NFL career was a big part of the reason the Bears are able to fight their way back into the game. Their defense and the struggles of the opposing quarterback enhanced by the defense. But Jaquan Brisker, just hopefully week by week, if he maintains health at this point in his career, the overall recognition, and that's where playing next to Kevin Byard, I'm really curious how that ends up enhancing the game of Jaquan Brisker, because Kevin Byard is a guy who's thought of as this encyclopedia of in-game knowledge, and a guy who is an excellent communicator and predictor of moments that the offense is going to do something and throw something at you. And you know, that type of leadership and communication skill should theoretically enhance the production of Jaquan Brisker that much more if you've got this sort of traffic cop, this soothsayer who's lined up next to you. Like Eddie Jackson was a more instinctual sort of player, whereas Kevin Byard is thought of as this guy who he just studies the game at this level that allows him to play in this predictive way and sets his teammates up to play in this predictive way where they know what the opponent's about to throw at them. And my hope is that enhances what can be viewed as the recognition of Jaquan Brisker. But I mean, even beyond recognition, like that first Tony Pollard touchdown run today, Jaquan Brisker got gloved up. He's right there. He's supposed to be running the alley. He's supposed to be fitting that run up. He got blocked, and Pollard's just running past everybody for a touchdown. Yeah, you got folks looking around like, hey, he got help. Throw the flag. Looking around for a flag while the ball carrier's going by. You know, that's a play you're expected to make. That's a block you're expected to fight off of. There's another third down, I think it was in the second half, on a 3rd and 3, where you got Kyler Gordon outside the numbers fighting off a block. Tyreek Stevens, Kyler Gordon's fighting off an offensive lineman. And Tyreek Stevenson outside the numbers fighting off a block. And Jaquan Brisker just sort of, and again, I'm going to credit it to rust in the season opener, and he missed a lot of preseason time being injured. But Jaquan Brisker, with an opportunity to make a third down tackle that would have gotten the Bears off the field, just sort of unblocked, just kind of hesitated a little bit as he worked outside the hash, outside the numbers, had an opportunity to make a tackle and get the Bears off the field, didn't get there in time to do that. So, you know, as of today, he's my who's cold. Jaquan Brisker is my who's cold for the moment, because I thought he had some moments on the field today where he struggled. He didn't look like the Jaquan Brisker he has looked like at times in his young career. And even just on the whole, I'm hoping for bigger things this season from Jaquan Brisker, because right now he's a guy who has had some big moments and who has made a good amount of tackles. I think there's another gear that Jaquan Brisker is capable of taking his game to, again, assuming health. Like, if he's able to stay healthy, be on the practice field, be on the game field, there's big-time potential there. I'm hoping to see him realize that at an even higher level than we've seen him realize it up to this point in his Bears career. Who's hot? DeAndre Carter. Who's cold? It's a lot of more obvious options, but for me, the standard I'm judging this Bears defense by, For right now, I'm going to say Jaquan Brisker is my who's cold coming off this Bears victory, 24-17 over the Tennessee Titans. There's a lot of options that were available, but that's what I'm going with for the day here. You can tune in all day tomorrow for a Plumbers 9-1 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority. Chuck Swirsky will be live from 12 to 5 a.m. overnight. Ben Mully and Haw will have full reaction to the game starting at 5:30 a.m. That is right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm Anthony Herron, taking you up to Sunday Night Football coverage on The Score tonight. The Rams take on the Lions on Sunday Night Football. Pregame coverage coming up at 6:30 and kickoff at 7:20 right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. More callers on the way on the post show. Your reaction to the first glimpse you had in the regular season of Bears quarterback Caleb Williams and this 2024 version of a team that does play in one of the deepest divisions in football. So being 1-0 is certainly better than the alternative, but reactions, especially what we are seeing on social media, a bit muted, a bit concerned, but callers we've had so far, some good context in the conversation. Let's keep that rolling on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Chicago Bears take down the Tennessee Titans. Opening game of the season. Final score, 24-17. It was good for the Bears, of course, to get the win. A lot to build off of, a lot to study on film, and they will certainly continue to do that in preparation for game number 2, which will be next week on Sunday Night Football against the Houston Texans. This is the post show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 Score. I'm Anthony Herron, taking you up to Sunday Night Football coverage, where the LA Rams are in Detroit preparing to face the Lions. We'll get that coverage going for you at 6:30 here on The Score and on the Odyssey app. Now, the game today, and I told you I was going to get to what I felt was worthy of critique from Shane Waldron and the Bears offense. You know, I don't want to overreact from one game. I tend to get a significant body of work gone, whether that was with Luke Getsy or with Matt Nagy, with Bill Lazor, with Dow Loggins. I let this thing roll for a little while before I really tell you, all right, there's something serious afoot here with the Bears play caller, whether that has been on either side of the ball, frankly. So I'm not going to tell you that with Shane Waldron, that anything sinister is afoot. I honestly liked a lot of what Shane Waldron was attempting to do today, because it wasn't an offense that was geared towards a stationary pocket and a drop back passing game that was tasking the offensive line with protecting a statue back there, especially considering that they have a mobile quarterback. So why turn your mobile quarterback into a statue? We saw that happen with Mitchell Trubisky and Justin Fields through multiple regimes. Shane Waldron didn't do that today. So I thought that was a positive. He got the pocket on the move. There was plenty of run action as the pocket was moving. Here's my concern. The amount of run action that was being utilized, to me, didn't really suit the amount of actual run game that was being called by Shane Waldron. He didn't run the ball nearly as much as I anticipated him running the ball today. Now, to be fair, there's some explainable reasons for that. I would imagine in the midst of the game, Shane Waldron is looking at the fact that the Bears were down 17-0 in the second quarter. All right, well, let's try to spark something. Let's try to get some tempo going here and see if that's a way to get Caleb into a rhythm. And I thought there was a stretch between the second quarter and third quarter where he started to, where Caleb Williams started to throw the ball with more urgency, more force, more accuracy, with more confidence. And some tempo is what began to do that. Now, it's often not a comfortable thing just to constantly go tempo. Yes, when you mix that in, it can be a way to put the opposing defense on their heels at times in game. It's harder for them to make personnel substitutions, more difficult for them to throw exotic schemes at you. But also, if things don't go well while you're running tempo, you throw your defense back onto the field at a moment's notice. And if you don't have the requisite experience and efficiency with your offense, a group that actually executes hurry up or quick tempo at a high level, then you can throw your own offense off kilter when you're just not capable of executing with the limited communication that can be there going hurry up. So it's nice to mix it in, but you know, Caleb is not alone in the way that we tend to see young quarterbacks coming from their offensive systems. They tend to be most comfortable operating with a certain degree of tempo, of pace, of hurry up, of no huddle, because that's kind of what they're accustomed to. But I didn't mind that being mixed in on occasion, and there was a stretch in the midst of the game where that did, in my opinion, seem to help Caleb. It seemed to allow him some comfort with the way he was throwing the football. He started throwing a few darts on some outcutting routes to DJ Moore and to Keenan Allen, and he looked more comfortable and confident with the way he was starting to deliver the football. It's a good thing. But that being said, the overall game plan, the execution of it, the way it was called in the midst of everything, where DeAndre Swift comes out of the game with 10 carries for 30 yards, I'm not digging that. And I don't expect DeAndre Swift to be a 20 to 25 carry kind of guy. But DeAndre Swift has 10 carries in a game where the Bears, in the end, were trying to run out some clock. So he got some extra carries in those moments, but he's in single digits carries in the fourth quarter of a game where the Bears, you know, especially once it got to the point where the game was back in the balance, where they weren't down multiple scores anymore, you got single digits carries for the majority of the game for DeAndre Swift. 2 carries in the game for Khalil Herbert. 2 carries in the game for Travis Homer. So that, from a game plan perspective, from a play call perspective, I like the fact that a lot of run action got utilized, but didn't love the fact that you're using a bunch of run action and you're not actually running the ball. Run action is that much more effective. Run action is that much more impactful when you've actually run the ball, when you've called a variety of run plays, and especially when those runs have been effective, when you've gained yards with the run, then you use play action, use run action. You fake the ball, you know, the quarterback extends his hand toward the belly of the back and then starts running in a different direction. That defense is more likely to overreact to it when you've actually called some run plays, which for big chunks of the game, Caleb was not actually handing the ball to the backs. He faked more handoffs in the game than he actually handed off, is my impression right now. I haven't done the raw numbers on it, but the ratio of fake handoff to actual handoff was probably close to even. I don't know that for sure. I may need to have somebody look into that and just see how accurate that is. But that's my impression coming out of it. I like that the pocket moved. I like that Caleb certainly showed the capabilities to move it. And Shane Waldron, in doing so, that takes pressure off your offensive line. It takes pressure off a young quarterback to have to read the full field. But using a bunch of play action, using a bunch of run action, and you haven't actually run the football that much, it doesn't affect the defense in the same way. You know, it doesn't have the same illusion to it that you're about to turn around and hand the ball off when they haven't seen you actually hand it off that often. So there's not as much of a ruse that you're pulling off. You're not forcing them to believe you're going to run the rock when you haven't been running the rock. So that balance between fake run versus real run, I think that ratio could use some work from Shane Waldron. But again, to be fair, to add context, I would say that the Bears, not only they trail by multiple scores, which even with that, you're trailing by multiple scores in the first half of the game, in the second quarter of the game. So, you know, I would tend to make the case through my sensibilities that you don't need to get too far outside your playbook anyway, just worried about being down 17 points in the second quarter. And like I said, it did begin to get Caleb in a little bit more of a rhythm. He did establish some more comfort throwing the football once they used a little bit of tempo, once they let him start to throw it for several snaps in a row. And also, the minus yardage plays. There were a number of TFLs. There were sacks. There were tackles for loss in the run game. There were tackles for no gain in the run game. And so then when you're sitting at second and long and certainly third and long or super long, then you're far more likely to come back and throw the football on the successive downs after you've had no success running it early. So there are some explainable reasons for this, for the limited amount of actual runs. I think within the flow of the game, it's explainable. But as far as just any critique, anything that I would look at and say, I wonder if Shane Waldron looks back at that and wonders if he could have handled something a little bit differently with the play calls, I would say it's that. I would say it's the fact that the amount of carries and overall touches for DeAndre Swift is my bigger observation for him throughout the whole season. How many touches is he getting? Not just carries, but carries and receptions, because he's an effective pass receiver. And there was a couple of times where Caleb just missed him out of the backfield trying to get it to him and just threw bad balls at times trying to get it to DeAndre Swift. But I think that his touches are going to end up being a bigger thing to track than his actual carries. But only 10 carries, there should be games where DeAndre Swift is closer to 15 carries plus. In a game today where the Bears didn't sustain offense that frequently, they're punting the ball away. Torrey Taylor was exceptional today. No surprise there. Go Hawks. Torrey Taylor was exceptional today. But DeAndre Swift with 10 carries in the game. Travis Homer, Khalil Herbert both with 2 carries apiece in the game. The run game on the whole, that's something I think that balance will need to be examined by Shane Waldron in the game plan afterwards. 312-644-6767. We've had some folks on hold for a little while here, so let me have Tyler go ahead and open these phone lines back up. Ann is out in Urbana. She's been waiting for a little while to discuss her observations from the Bears game. What's happening, Ann?
Hey, how are you? Just actually still driving back to Urbana from the game today.
Okay.
Yeah, it was awesome to be out there. You're definitely right where the crowd seemed to almost turn on us when we were down 17-0. But when the defense woke up, it was great to hear the crowd get alive. The thing my dad and I noticed was, I know you said Herbert got 2 touches, but it seemed like him and Cole Kmet were nowhere to be seen on the offense. And especially when they were struggling, we thought those would be 2 guys with experience that the Bears would have tried to get out there to help get it going forward. So we're just wondering your thoughts on that today.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a good question and a valid observation. And play callers tend to be in this position. I talk to play callers at the NFL level, play callers at the college level, and there's this balance that play callers tend to, you know, at times struggle with, or at least just go into a game plan trying to strike the balance between how often when you're calling plays, are you focused on the play itself or the player that you're trying to get the football to. And that can be a difficult balance within the scope of a game because, you know, especially if your offense doesn't have a lot of flow, a lot of rhythm to it, if you're not having much success, if your drives are stalling, or if you're going backwards, then, you know, it puts you in a bind as a play caller because you're not actually feeling like what you're going to call has a good chance to be executed at a high level anyway. And your playbook isn't nearly as open on 2nd and 13 as it is on 2nd and 3. So when you're going backwards on the previous snap, then it condenses how you actually can comfortably operate. And so through the lens of thinking about the players who didn't get the ball, 100% right. It would have been nice to see Khalil Herbert get the ball more frequently. It would have been nice to see more targets for Cole Kmet in the game, because these are two players who in recent years have shown themselves to be a couple of the more effective, more impactful playmakers that the Bears have. Now, at the same time, you did add Keenan Allen to the mix, and he's making 20 mil plus this year. So Keenan Allen gets 11 targets in the game. They threw the ball his way a bunch. He only had 4 receptions to show for it. So that's worthy of concern. 11 targets, only 4 catches for a potential future Hall of Famer. He was hobbling around for a bit. You know, don't know exactly what the definitive prognosis for Keenan Allen will be moving forward, but 11 targets in the game going to Keenan Allen, look at it and say, okay, maybe a few of those could have gone to Cole Kmet. Maybe a few other touches or carries could have been intended for Khalil Herbert, especially because things just didn't end up going well. Now, at any point where Caleb is throwing the ball towards Keenan Allen, he's throwing it with the intention of completing it. So if he knows it's not going to be complete going that way, he's less likely. I would imagine he wouldn't be as likely to throw it in the direction of Keenan Allen if he thought it was going to be incomplete. But there's different weapons, different playmakers on the offense now than what they've seen in recent years. You know, Gerald Everett got a third down target that ended up, I think that one might have even gone as a tackle for loss on the one that got thrown to Gerald Everett. But there's more playmakers the Bears have access to. So it can explain why there's a little less that goes to Cole Kmet or Khalil Herbert. But I get it. I get it. And the caller on her way to, not yet in Urbana, but on her way to Urbana. By the way, the Illini did come up with a big win last night. Took down a ranked Kansas squad. Stormed the field there in Champaign, Urbana. Sounds like Ann might have been there, or at least in the vicinity of that last night, if she's in Urbana anyway. Let's get a couple other callers in here. 312-644-6767. Talking about the Bears on the post-post show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm taking you up to Sunday night football coverage on The Score. Got Tom, who's out in Lombard, wants to talk about Cole Kmet. We were just talking about some of the weaponry that the Bears have access to. Tom's got some thoughts on that. What's happening, Tom?
27 snaps for a 6'6", 265-pound tight end who is your best pass blocker. And if you watch the film and you watch that center and that guard get blown up, let's be real clear here. Tennessee's not going to the playoffs this year, okay? We all know that. But for Cole Kmet to be the featured tight end on this team and play 27 snaps and not stay in for max pass protection and then run some waggles, run some seam routes, something's not right. There is absolutely something wrong. I get it. You got some Maseratis, you got some Lamborghinis. But if this kid doesn't have time to throw the ball, nothing good's going to happen. 149 yards in offense. If Cole Kmet isn't part of the solution, then this offensive coordinator is the problem. I'll hang up and listen.
All right, strong stuff from Tom there. Again, you know, I'm trying to give that one game sample size sort of assessment of things with Shane Waldron. I'm not going to throw up a bunch of sirens as of yet, but it is a worthy observation. 27 snaps in the game for Cole Kmet. Again, Bears weren't sustaining a lot of drives. There's only so much offense getting run. So Cole Kmet on the field for about half the time, essentially, in game. He was on the field for about half the game. Now, that's your high-dollar tight end. That's your main playmaker. Should he be on the field more? Should you at least have one tight end or even multiple tight ends out there the majority of the time? If you are struggling in pass protection, then I think a lot of that is worthy of observing in review of the game and of how the Bears' offense was operating. But again, to be fair to Shane Waldron, we did see a number of examples of Caleb Williams having an open receiver in these offensive sets and overthrowing guys or throwing behind guys. So some of these imperfections, certainly willing to highlight the concern that's worthy from Shane Waldron's perspective, while again, it's one game in. But out of anybody, you know, the rookie number one overall pick, some of his imperfections in the game that are worth pointing out, worth discussing. I'm not nearly as worried about that because it's a guy making his first career start in the NFL. Bigger concerns about the Bears' offensive line and, yes, observations about Shane Waldron and this Bears offense. But again, some open guys out there. Caleb's overthrowing, underthrowing, throwing behind, that kind of stuff. The Bears offensive line and some of those concerns there. I was addressing that earlier in the show with the big guys up front getting run over, getting run through. You go back and evaluate that film, and everyone in football parlance usually ends up saying that big jump, that leap that you take from game one to game two tends to be the biggest one. So to me, what I saw from the Tennessee Titans today, I did feel like that was an impressive collection of physicality, of talent at some key spots. I like their secondary. I like their D-line. I like their linebackers. I like their O-line. I like their running backs. They're not that deep at receiver yet, but they're not that healthy at receiver yet either. And Will Levis certainly leaves some things to be desired as a second-year quarterback. But, you know, I think if you had a different quarterback with the Tennessee Titans, could we be discussing them as a potential playoff team? You know, like I view the Titans, having now seen the Titans and watched a full game of them. I went to Colts training camp and saw them in person, and Anthony Richardson, what he brings to the table there in Indianapolis. I think there are some similarities between kind of those two rosters, where those two squads are at, with, you know, like representative level NFL talent. Not amongst the best rosters in football, but not some embarrassing roster either. Like the Colts just narrowly missed beating the Houston Texans. They lost by two to Houston. Bears are going to play Houston next week. Texans made the playoffs last year, won a playoff game. This historic rookie season, where now C.J. Stroud has rewritten the expectation for what a rookie quarterback is expected to do in the NFL. I'd say for the callers we've had so far, I'm pleased with the perspective. I think callers have been fairly responsible with the way that the performance of Caleb Williams is being viewed. Let's get one more caller in before I get out of here. Tony is out on the south side wanting to talk about what was seen there at Soldier Field today. What's happening, Tony?
Hey, what's happening? I think the problem that most fans are going to have, or that any of them that are paying attention for the past couple of years, is that we're seeing more of the same. Now, I'm not talking about the defense and special teams winning us games, because that's been like Bear tradition to the point where it's cliche. I'm talking about the fact that we knew in the offseason center was a problem. I realize everyone's going to say they went and they tried to get it, but coming over from the Rams, we knew Shelton spent more time on his back than an adult film star, okay? We know that there was problems with pass protection. We know that keeping guys in to help Max protect was going to be an issue. We didn't address that. I have a problem, too, with watching over and over and over again these coaches, and it's not just Eberflus, but Nagy did this as well, where, oh, we're not going to play anybody in the preseason because, you know, we don't feel as though they need the reps. I think, and it's not just the Bears, you can watch this league-wide, and I know you watch the games. Look how many procedural penalties, people not lined up in the right spot, having 25 seconds on a play clock, being up at the line, and then taking a delayed game penalty. Watch underthrow or drop passes. You needed to do anything and everything in this offseason to get that rookie quarterback ready, because I do believe that he is the answer. I know a couple callers ago, your guy said, look what they did with Fields. Fields didn't do anything in Pittsburgh today. He still threw for 150 yards, no touchdowns, still at a fumble. I think the problem that most people have is we're watching more of the same. If they want to prove that they're going to change, then it has to start next week with the Texans, and you need to see that jump. Because if not, this is going to be another long season.
All right, strong call there to close things out from Tony. And, you know, again, I don't have big alarms to sound after the first game. The Bears did end up winning the game today. But there are things that are worthwhile having on your radar, worthwhile being concerned about one game into this thing. But that is all we are. We are just one game in. And I like the fact that the callers throughout the evening so far feel like we're fairly responsible with their impressions of Caleb Williams in a game that he struggled in the midst of his first career start in the National Football League. This was supposed to be a roster that's been bolstered with all this additional talent. Expect that talent to show up more in the games to come. And that big leap that I referenced from game one to game two. That's all the time I got for the post-post show. We got the Rams getting ready to take on the Detroit Lions on Sunday Night Football. Pregame coverage coming up at 6:30 and kickoff at 7:20 right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. Thanks to my guy, Tyler Butteball. Thanks to all of you for calling, for listening. The Bears have come up with a big win. You got Bears Monday tomorrow. Plumbers 911 Football Monday on The Score, presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority. Chuck Swirsky will be coming up at midnight until 5 a.m. overnight. Then Mully and Hall will have full reaction to the game starting at 5:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. Appreciations and salutations for everybody listening to the Post Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.